It's a recording of the reminiscences of Miss Dorothy Austin. The narrator is Miss Austin, and the interviewer is Betty Turnell. The recording is being made at the request of the Decatur Public Library. We are recording at the home of Miss Austin at 1764 North Oak Crest Avenue in Decatur on February 21st, 1984. Well, we're very good friends, so I'm going to call you Dorothy, if you don't mind. Dorothy, your family is one of the pioneers of Decatur and Macon County. In the book, The History of Macon County, published in 1976, there are many references to Joseph Austin and his four sons, Benjamin, William, Joseph Jr., and a half-brother, Jesse. I believe the Austin family arrived here in 1831. Now, do you know from which branch of the family you are descended?
Yes, William Austin was my great-grandfather. He and his brother Benjamin came before the rest of the family. Benjamin was the surveyor, and my great-grandfather assisted him in his work.
I believe that your great-grandfather married a descendant of another pioneer family. Isn't that true?
Yes. He married Eleanor Warnick. Many of you know of the Warnick family. The story is that Judge Warnick loaned the first law book that Abraham Lincoln ever read.
So even though he operated a tavern, he was probably a fairly well-educated man. A tavern probably didn't have exactly the connotation then that it does now.
No, the tavern was a place to stay, much as our hotels are today. It's rather interesting that Benjamin Austin established a rooming house or a boarding house or whatever they called it at that time, was located where the post building is in downtown Decatur.
Is that where the Post jewelry store used to be?
Yes, it is on that corner.
Then you came from this branch of the family, but William Austin didn't stay here, did he? Or was it a later branch of the family that moved away?
The family moved, at least part of them moved into Christian County, where my father was born. He was born in a little log cabin about 4 miles northwest of where Blue Mound is at the present time. As a small boy, he and his mother and father, left in a covered wagon and started for Texas. When they got as far as Missouri, they turned around and came back. I never knew exactly the reason for them coming back. It may have been related to the fact that the Texas Stephen Austin was had been trying to get many people to come down into that area, and then at that time it was part of Mexico, and the Mexicans prohibited any new Anglo-Saxon families to move into the area because the population was increasing so rapidly.
So it would be a rather dangerous undertaking. And of course, maybe your great-great-grandmother or whatever the relationship was had something to say about it too. I think those journeys must have been very hard on women. so we could understand. I mean, no one would question anyone turning back. The thing that is interesting is that Barnard of the Pioneers didn't turn back. It was a very hard life, wasn't it?
Yes, but several of the Austin families were in a group as they started down there. Many of them stayed in Missouri, and others came back, or at least I know that my grandfather and my father came back and settled back northwest of Blue Mound. The log cabin in which my father was born was later, or the family later, moved it across the road to the northwest corner of that intersection. And the present house is built around the original log cabin.
That's true. Many buildings are really log cabins, but because they have other siding on, we don't recognize them as such. Your father could have competed with Abraham Lincoln in being born in a log cabin, couldn't he? Did you grow up in Christian County?
Our family moved around a great deal. My older brother, J.B. Austin, was born in Decatur in 1904. Then the family moved to North Dakota, where my second brother was born. Then the family moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I was born. We moved to Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, where my sister was born. And then we came back to Decatur in 1917, I believe.
So you grew up then, really, in Decatur. That is, you were here from 1917 on.
Yes. I first went to Decatur schools when I was in the second grade. I went to second grade at Mary W. French School. Then we moved, and I went to Oakland School. Then Oakland School became too crowded, and I was transferred back to French School. Then we moved onto North Dennis, and I attended Dennis School. Then when Roosevelt Junior High School opened, I went there as a seventh grader. Then I went to Stephen Decatur.
And you stayed there till you graduated from high school. I believe you told me that when you were in high school or shortly after you graduated, that you had an interesting work experience with the J.C. Penney store. Is that right?
Yes, it was quite an interesting experience for me. It was during the late 20s, probably in 1926, that I was in a group that was discussing the possibility of us working. I was a junior at that time, and all of them were interested in finding jobs because the times were pretty hard. I happened to be sitting next to the daughter of the manager, part owner and part manager of JCPenney store. She turned to me and said, "Dorothy, I think my dad would give you a job if you come down." I had to wait till he got back from his convention, went down, and he offered to pay me $1 a day for Saturday work. I had good luck that first day and sold quite a few things, so Harriet persuaded her father to pay me $1.25 for a Saturday. Later on, I helped her in the office. Then the family wanted to go during the early part of 1927. Harriet had been cashier and bookkeeper of the store. Her father was part owner and manager of the penny store, as the organization was set up at that time. It was in the 300 block, North Water Street, on the east side, near where the trunk factory was. When Harriet needed help with making change, I was called on to help her with that. Then the family wanted to go to the state of Washington for a reunion with some of their family members, and asked me to take over the cashier and bookkeeper a position there at the store, and continue with it through the following year. Now, this was the year that I was graduating from high school. I intended to go to college, but I wasn't able to, so I refused to commit myself. But when they couldn't find someone that they wanted to leave in that job, they asked me if I would take it on and stay with it until they got back from their trip to Washington. I agreed. They got back in August, and Harriet was dead within 3 days. She had contracted an illness on their trip. They had no one to go on with the office work, and I didn't have the money to go to school. So I agreed to stay for one more year, and then I knew I was going to go to school. So I stayed on as cashier and bookkeeper of the JCPenney store here. I had many interesting talks with JCPenney himself, who came many times to the store.
What kind of person was he?
He had a very interesting personality. He was sincere. He was a hard worker. He would sell overalls and shoes just like the rest of us did at times. Because at that time, the clerks were serving customers all over the store. It made a very interesting background for many people I know who have later clerked in the other Decatur stores.
But you think that Mr. Penny was a very admirable character?
Very. He believed in policies that are quite different from the modern methods as far as salesmanship are concerned. He really believed in the golden rule, and that's the basis of the JCPenney stores. At that time, there were no sales. It was one price, and they stayed with it. I remember an interesting experience. One woman came in and wanted to buy something, and the JCPenney store was 50 cents a piece. She refused to buy because she could get two for a dollar. I beg your pardon. The penny price was 49 cents and no taxes at that time. She refused to buy because she could get them at a store across the street two for a dollar.
There is something wrong with her mathematics.
I think so. I remember a story that you might be interested in of early Decatur. One of my aunts, May Austin, married George Muirhead. He has told me about an experience he had when he was a small boy. As most of you know, Hieronymus Mueller had the first car indicator. He passed a store in downtown Decatur one day and saw this little boy standing and waiting. Knowing it would be such a treat, he stopped and asked my uncle if he'd like to take a ride in the car. Of course, of all things, he would just love to have had a ride in that car. But he explained to Mr. Mueller that his father had gone into the store, left him out there, but had told him to stay there until he got back. Mr. Mueller, this is a reflection, I think, on the personality that Mr. Mueller had. He was so impressed with my uncle's dedication to doing as his father had asked, that he waited until my uncle came out of the store, then asked permission, and took my uncle for a ride.
That's true. That is true. That is a good story. Then you stayed with the JCPenney store that during that year when you were the head bookkeeper and office manager.
Yes. But the next fall, I went to Milliken, and I took 2 years of training at Milliken to prepare me for teaching. At that time, many of the teachers were going into teaching at the end of 2 years. I was assigned to Ulrich School when I found out that I was to go, had been assigned to Ulrich School. I didn't know where it was, although I had been in Decatur all these years. And I found out that it was at the southeast corner of Condit and Broadway. Many of people will know it in later years as at the northwest corner of the Longview Housing Project. I always say, but the school was there first. I became a teacher of second grade there, also taught third, and had applied to teach sixth for a change when I was asked to be principal. I taught as a teacher there for 11 years and served as principal for 28 years.
Now, there was a story about the school, I believe. Why was it named Ulrich?
Ulrich School was named for a board member, a school board member. I can't tell you whether it was during the time he was on the school board or later, but Mr. Ulrich was the first millionaire that Decatur had. He came to this country with $5 in his pocket and started helping on boats on the Mississippi River in their trips taking produce down to the New Orleans area. As he saved his money, he invested it in land in this general area.
How did he become interested in Decatur, a little far from the Mississippi? Did he have friends or relatives here? Did you know?
I have no idea whether he had any relatives here, but Decatur, of course, was on up the Sangamon River, mm-hmm. Which was used in some of the shipping at that time. I cannot say as to just why he settled here. However, he married his daughter married a man from Bloomington. You might be interested in something nice that happened to us at Ulrich School. Miss Ulrich, who was had as a child, had very interesting experiences in that, although she didn't appreciate it at the time, Lincoln was a guest in their home quite often. And she said, if I had ever known how important Abraham Lincoln was to be, I'd have paid more attention to what they were talking about. You might be interested to know that while I was principal, I did write to Mrs. Ewing, as she was known then. She had married this man from Bloomington. I did write to her and to see whether they might be interested in doing anything special for Decatur schools or for Ulrich School. We were going into a period of some special programs, and I thought she might find that that was a good time to go in with some special help. She sent $1,000 to the school board and asked that the teachers and principal at Ulrich School be allowed to decide what the money was to be used for, but it was to be used for Ulrich School. We had no assembly room. What we needed were materials to help the youngsters with experiences and with the help that they could receive through teaching aids. We made out a list and sent it to the board. First, the board thought that we should do something that would honor Mr. Ulrich. However, I had been in correspondence with Mrs. Ewing on the matter to see whether it had met with her permission, and I duplicated that letter and sent it to all the board members, and the board members then approved the...
You mean her answer to you? You
yes.
Her answer,
To me.
What did she
then,
say?
She said that the idea of using it for materials to help children learn was in accordance with Mr. Ulrich's philosophy and hers too. Within a year or so, probably the first time she came to Decatur, which she did usually once a year, she came out to school, met the teachers, some of the children, and was very happy with the things that we had purchased with that. Many of them were, or some of them were, equipment in the way of tape recorders, flashcards, dolls for the kindergarten and primary rooms. Any item that the teacher had felt she needed to do a good job of teaching with the children. After she went back, and probably a year later, she sent a check to me in care of my handling for $1,500. Mm. We deposited with the with the school accounts. That is, they were handled through the public school office. And everything was, again, requisitioned and charged against that account. We, again, bought learning materials to enrich the background of the children that were going to Yulee School. She came to visit us several times. She was in her 90s by then. At the time of her death, she left another $1,000 to the Yulee School. This we used in the same way. I had inquired, had written to her and asked her at I think at the time of the first $1,000, I had asked whether or not she had a picture, a good picture of her father that we could have enlarged and we could hang it in the lower corridor. Instead of a small picture, a large picture came, already framed, that she had made especially for us. We had a nameplate made to go on the bottom explaining that Mr. Or that Mrs. Ewing had given it in memory of her father, for whom the school was named. The picture is now at the historical museum here in Decatur, in the Decatur Macon County Historical Association building.
Well, that's a lovely story. I'm sure Mr. Ulrich would have been pleased.
I know he was, and at one time her niece came with her. Her niece was married to a Stevenson, and she was very much impressed too with the work that was being done in the school. The Yulee School has now been closed, is no longer in the public school system, but that material, much of that material, is now scattered all over Decatur where the items were needed. Have taken them to the schools where they were needed. So her $3,500 was well invested and is still working in the Decatur school system to help with the education of children.
Very good. And I'm sure you would feel that it was a great help to you as principal of the school. You taught there, or were principal there, I believe you said, 28 years?
Yes.
Were there any special people who came through that you remember definitely?
We had many youngsters. I don't feel qualified right now to name names, but during the war, one of the boys whom I had taught as a third grade child was one of four men in the Army, in the armed forces, let me revise it that way, who knew the electrical wiring of the big bombers. And he and the other three members of the team were sent from camp to camp to do the instruction work there. We have teachers who have gone, former students who had gone into teaching. I know of several. The thing that has impressed me most was the fact that the children have seemed to establish good homes. Many of them have gone on into the labor force and have been treasurers and presidents of labor groups here. But it's quite interesting, the number who still recognize and speak to me, and then they ask about former teachers and express an appreciation of what those teachers had contributed to their lives.
So you really probably feel that you made the wise decision to not to stay selling merchandise all your life, but to go into teaching. At least it must have been a very satisfying career that you finally went into.
Each year was different. Each year was interesting and very challenging. As many of the other teachers here in the Decatur district, I went on, although I didn't stop. As many other teachers, I took extra work during the summers and during the school year, and completed my bachelor's work at the University of Illinois, and then continued at U of I as in and received my master's degree, and then went on and got a few credits in addition to that, always taking work that would help me in the teaching work. I don't begrudge a bit of the experience that I had at the school. It was very challenging and very satisfying to me.
And of course now you have retired from teaching. Do you have any thoughts about retirement?
Yes, retirement can be very interesting. It could be terribly boring. But especially if you have someone that you can enjoy being with and traveling with and attending meetings with, it's a very interesting time. Retirement is not a time to stay away from people. Retirement is a time when you can learn to really enjoy the companionship of people.
Well, it sounds as if you are enjoying this new life of retirement that you have described. We thank you very much for sharing your reminiscences and experiences with us. And I know that your former students would probably echo that too, that they appreciate all that you have done. We thank you, and we appreciate, as I said, all that you have told us. You have been listening to the experiences of Dorothy Austin. This is Betty Turnell speaking for the Decatur Public Library.